Hello and welcome to the Vivo Life Show. I'm your host, Josh Boulding, and I'm the co-founder of the plant-based health and fitness supplement company, Vivo Life. I'm joined on today's show by animal activist, Seb Alex. Now, I know what you're thinking. When I say the words animal activist, you immediately think of someone who is a little bit weird, probably quite aggressive, and the kind of person that's going to shout at you on the street if he finds out you're eating meat. Well, Seb Alex is none of these things, and in fact, he is perhaps the most peaceful, understanding and empathetic activist that I have ever come across. His activism comes in many forms, but really it is a compassionate approach to activism, and it's about meeting people where they're at. Now, if you are vegan, or if you have encountered a vegan in the past who's been trying to convince you of their viewpoint, then you'll probably know that if you are confronted with aggression and someone attacking your beliefs, then you are very likely going to get your back up and defend those beliefs and probably not listen to what the person's going to say. I know I found this out myself the hard way. When I first went vegan 5 years ago, I was the first person that would want to tell everyone about it. And oftentimes, I'll be honest, I would criticize people when they didn't agree with the choices that I was making. Now, over the last 5 years, I've learned that that is not the approach that wins people over. And in fact, who am I to judge people for eating meat or consuming dairy products when I did it for the vast majority of my life? So now I prefer to meet people with a smile, to lead by example, and to meet them where they're at, to give them the information in an educational, non-biased way, and ultimately let them make their own decisions, because I firmly believe that no one would want to harm animals. No reasonable person would want to harm animals if they had the facts and they knew what their food choices were contributing to. Now, Seb Alex is definitely of the same mold, and in today's episode, we talk about his journey into veganism, why he believes that a calm and understanding approach is the best approach when it comes to activism. And we also talk about the vegan diet as a whole, the movement, where it's going, where it's come from, and really, probably my favorite part of the show was towards the end, where we address all of the biggest arguments that people often come at you with: why a vegan diet doesn't work, why it isn't sustainable, why it's a romantic fallacy. And Seb breaks them all down so eloquently. It's just fantastic. So if ever you are a vegan and you're met with questions that sometimes you can't answer about, you know, is a vegan diet really what it claims to be, then this gives you all the answers and all the facts that you need to know. What I love about Seb's approach is he is always fact first, and he doesn't get caught up in ideologies. He looks at the science and is able to provide such a rational, balanced viewpoint that it is impossible to argue with. So whether you're vegan or not, I encourage you to listen to this episode with an open mind. And very quickly, I think you will understand just why Seb is held in such high regard within the vegan community and outside of it, by universities, colleges, schools, events, workshops, corporate organizations, all of these businesses and organizations that have brought Seb in to talk to them and provide a rational viewpoint on veganism backed by science and allowing people to make their own decisions. I think Seb's work is fantastic and so needed in a world where everyone has a voice, everyone is putting opinions out on social media. For someone to be able to cut through those, look at things from an objective point of view, and represent veganism, represent the animals, represent the planet in such a beautiful light. I was so pleased to share the mic with Seb, and I think you're going to love this episode. Thanks, guys. Catch you soon. I'd love to hear a little bit more then about your story, because this is actually out of pure curiosity from my end. Obviously, as a man growing up in Lebanon, I would love to know, you know, what kind of first attracted you to the vegan lifestyle, and what was it that allowed you to make the connection?
So in the beginning, actually, I was 16 years old. We had a family cat, and he was like really known between my friends because I was kind of obsessed with him. And eventually one day a friend of mine was like, you call yourself an animal lover and you keep on talking about your cat, but at the end of the day you're still eating animal products and you still go hunting and everything, so you're not really an animal lover, you're just a hypocrite. And I was like, wow. And so we started arguing back and forth, and then she was like, okay, listen, I'm going to show you a video and then we'll continue the conversation. So she showed me Meet Your Meat. It's like 12 minutes long, factory, farm, slaughterhouse footage. And when I finished, I was like, she was vegetarian at the time. And I thought, okay, so I obviously don't like what I saw, and I don't want to stop, but I also cannot think of an argument. So I guess I'm gonna be vegetarian now. I didn't know anything about veganism for like 8 years. I thought I'm doing the right thing or doing enough. And then 8 years after, I was out of boredom wondering why, as humans, we still drink breast milk. Like, nutritionally speaking, what's the need for us to do that from another animal's mother, not even human breast milk? So I Googled. I knew there was a thing called vegan, but I thought it's people who have certain health conditions. And obviously, I thought you need like eggs for protein, milk for calcium, blah, blah, blah. So I Googled, why don't vegans drink milk? And eventually, I saw Gary Yourofsky's speech on YouTube, another speech called 101 Reasons to Go Vegan. And then I started watching Earthlings, and within 20 minutes, I was like, I'm convinced anyway, I'm not gonna watch this. So, yeah, that's how I became vegan.
It's very interesting what you said there about initially how you met it with resistance. And
Yeah.
from knowing you now and knowing what an open heart you have and how you're willing to receive, virtually any, comment or meet anyone where they're at, and to actually be in that place yourself where you actually resisted it, it's quite a powerful realization to have, isn't it? Because then you can really identify when you bring it forward to someone else and you immediately see the same reactions that you went through, right?
Yeah, and that's why I say, like, Malcolm X has an amazing quote about meeting, like, not attacking people straight away because at one point you were where they are right now. And I really try to implement that in my activism because, yeah, I have been the type of person who has said you need milk for calcium, you know. I mean, even when I decided to go vegan, I wasn't happy about it. I knew I'm gonna do it, but I wasn't like happy that I'm gonna stop eating all these foods that I loved eating. But I also knew that nothing that I saw, I mean, I had no argument, and I tried to be as logically consistent as possible. And I was like, okay, I'm screwed. I guess I'm going vegan. But yeah, I think it's important to remember we weren't all in that place from day one.
I think it's crucial because, and this is what attracts me so much to the work that you do, because I think there is still, and it is breaking down, but there is still a stereotype where people think of a vegan activist as being someone who can come forward sometimes from a place of aggression and sometimes from a place of, sometimes it can be rude and it can be intimidating. And whilst I fully understand the position that these people are in, because they are bringing forward so much hurt and so much pain from the other sentient beings that they're representing,
Yeah.
you have an approach that is so much more peaceful and understanding. Now, is that an approach that you have consciously cultivated over time and realized that this is a way that it resonates with people more from an activist point of view, or is it something that's always come naturally to you?
Yeah, definitely not naturally. No, it was a struggle. I've had, and I still have my moments where I just lose it, or you know, sometimes when I know someone is just like, let's say, writing a comment just for the sake of writing a comment, and I know whatever I say is gonna be useless, then I don't really put much effort. But usually people say something in self-defense because they don't want to identify with the horrible things they're finding out that they're doing. And if we defend themselves, then we've already lost because they're defending an abusive action that we know is immoral. So we have to try our best in making sure that they see more in common with us than differences. So I always mention that, hey, just like you, I mean, I love eating meat. I love eating cheese, you know, I'm not saying. And then the more you bring up similarities, the more they have common grounds to identify with you. And eventually they can identify within, like they can identify with the feeling within you of wanting to help innocent animals that are being slaughtered. And I've also read, actually, I have it right here. It's one of the most important books I think anyone could read, activist or not, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, I know it well.
It's like, I read this and I was like, this is supposed to be the only book you need in school, you know? But yeah, so I read books, and it helped me realize, okay, it's, if I want to be effective, and activism, a lot of people think activism is about being right. it's not about being right, it's about effective. Animals don't care if you're right in your argument if your argument wasn't effective, you know. Someone can argue, and I would probably agree that punching someone who made some joke or even verbally attacking them is justified, maybe, but then again, is that effective? You know, it's not effective at all. You've just hurt someone.
Yeah.
And that someone is not going to go vegan because you hurt them. And who's going to pay the price? Not you, not them, the animals. So I think we really have to focus on being effective rather than being right. And that's what really made me realize, no matter how angry or frustrated I could get, I have to keep in mind that I'm not the victim here. And I should be dealing with my emotions better for the sake of the animals, who are the real victims.
Powerful, man. Powerful. And this is such a profound awareness. It's separating your own ego from the actual objective of what you're trying to do, because it can be, you know, as humans, we are all governed by ego, and it can be really tempting to actually, you know, identify with, okay, I'm making this argument so well, and I'm, you know, portraying myself in this best way, but actually we bring it back to, why am I here? Why have I, like, you have dedicated your life to this point, to animal activism, and realizing that actually, you know, the objective is for the animals, right? It's not for ourselves. It is a wider picture.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why it's really important to constantly work on ourselves, on bettering ourselves, and also being very critical of our own activism. You know, I have in the past, I remember there's this one Facebook post I made. I was really frustrated, and I wrote, if you know that in the dairy industry, this happens, if you know in the meat industry, and I wrote about all the industries one by one, and I finished it with, and you still don't go vegan, then go, you know, fuck yourself, basically. I literally wrote that as a Facebook status, and then I had all these friends reaching out to me and saying, what the hell are you saying, man? That's not cool. And I was like, I don't care. You know, these people are careless. They don't care about the animals.
Yeah.
And one person, actually, this is really weird. My sister's best friend, childhood best friend, who I hadn't seen for like 15 years, reached out to me and said, hey, Seb, I just want to let you know that when I saw what she wrote, I felt really confused, because I know you're not the type of person who would talk like that. And that led me into doing some research, and I'm going vegan. But that's one person out of, I don't know, probably 80 or 100 people that saw that post. And I'm pretty sure the majority who weren't vegan were not attracted to my message. Even though I still stand by it, like, you're really messed up if you know and you're still not doing any changes. But I prefer being your friend and helping you do the changes than just throw you under the bus and say, I don't care, you know, like, you're useless. That's not going to help anyone. So.
Totally agree, man. And I firmly believe that I'm sure there are exceptions, but the vast majority of humanity, if they are presented with, if they can dissolve their own belief systems, which is effectively, they've built up over years and years and years and years of conditioning, if we can dissolve those, then anyone who is met with the objective facts, then there is absolutely no choice, right? It just becomes a matter of, you know, it's purely a moral decision. But unfortunately, we have, myself included, been brought up in a society where these belief systems indoctrinated the choices we make, the purchases we make, the food we ate. And for the vast majority of my life, I did exactly the same too, you know, because these belief systems were a part of me. And knowing that, you understand that it's not the person that's at fault, it is the society as a whole. And this is the profound realization, because then suddenly these people are not the enemy. These people are actually our allies. And these are people that, you know, by lovingly teaching them the things that you do, then we can actually have them on our team as well.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the reasons why I started doing lectures in schools and universities, because the years of conditioning is much lower. And so it's easier to change them. And they're still like sponges. They want to like absorb information. And that's also why education is so important. I mean, the whole reason, as you said, most of the people, if those beliefs didn't exist and they were just given the objective reality, they would accept it. And we have to keep in mind that this is an industry that relies on brainwashing and secrecy. And that's why I believe exposing and education are the most important things, but also the biggest enemy of the industry is transparency. You know, that's literally their biggest enemy. For example, they say humanely slaughtered, you know. If humane slaughter was something good, we wouldn't be the ones exposing the footage. They would be the ones saying, look how nice we killed them, you know. So exposing and educating is very, very important. And we have to keep in mind that, yeah, people are the result of the society that they're brought up in. And if their society said it's okay, even though it's immoral, they're going to think it's okay.
So that then leads us to the question, how do we shift as a collective? You know, this is never going to happen from just one person. How do we shift the way society is structured and the way that, you know, governments are funding the meat industries and factory farming, and the whole system is built to allow these structures to exist? How do we go about impacting that change?
I think the answer, my personal opinion, would be that this is why so many different types of activism are needed in bringing the change. So we need the street activists, we need the undercover footage activists, we need the rescuers, we need the plant-based influencers, you know, we need the vegan businessmen, we need the vegan politicians, because this is such a huge industry that affects today's society and exists in society in so many different ways that we need as many different activism types as possible to change them. So a lot of people don't like, I myself in the past, I didn't like big organizations such as Mercy for Animals or PETA, you know, and there are some things that they still do that I don't completely agree with, but at the same time, I can't do corporate outreach the way they can. So I need them to do corporate outreach. I hate politicians, but I need vegan politicians to play their part, you know. I hate dealing with politics, but I want there to be groups working with politics, because we have to keep in mind that we are at the moment in a place where when it comes to animal agriculture, it's almost no longer a demand and supply situation, because even when their products aren't sold, they still get bailed out with our tax money, you know. So subsidies are there and they are basically undoing all our efforts. And that's why it's great that groups such as Vegan Justice League exist, and they work with changing the subsidies. I mean, they lobby to stop the subsidies, or they say we have to use the subsidies to help farmers who want to switch their business to a plant-based business instead of animal farming, you know. So I really believe that there is no such thing as the type of activism that will bring animal liberation. It's going to be a coalition. It's going to be like a mix of all the different things that we have in today's society, and then attack all of from all these different angles.
The beautiful thing is, I feel it shifting, and I feel it shifting faster than ever, because the conversation is happening now. If you rewind it to, you know, 2000, was it 2011 you went vegan, or do I have that right?
6.5 years ago, so 2013 maybe.
2013, okay. Rewind it back to then, and the difference in the scale of the conversation now.
Oh, yeah. No. Crazy, it's nothing. Right? Nothing. Like, PETA existed, animal equality or Mercy for Animals existed, but no other, like, activism organizations, the way they exist now, existed at the time. Social media wasn't taken over by vegans, you know, it wasn't on the news, it wasn't, like, on the stock market, like Beyond Meat, you know? So it's definitely, it's blown up. I mean, when I went vegan, I was the only vegan I knew.
Wow.
So it speaks for itself, you know? Now almost everyone knows at least one vegan.
Absolutely. So I want to rewind actually to the beginning of this conversation, because you mentioned someone who I respect massively, and that's Malcolm X. And yeah. I heard in, so I was actually watching some of your YouTube videos this morning, and I watched one of the speeches that you did at Perth University, where you compared the struggle of a vegan animal activist to the activism that was apparent in things like the Black Rights Movement, the anti-slavery movement, in the women's rights and the suffragettes movement. And whilst I know you weren't comparing the emotional feeling that an animal activist has compared to someone living in slavery, for example, we that you brought up a very succinct point that the movements themselves are actually almost parallel, because at one point in time, there were the people who were considered the outliers, the weirdos. In many times, they were sent to prison or even worse for what they chose to speak up about their beliefs. Now, how does that relate to where we are at in an animal activism perspective? And at what point on the timeline do you feel that we're at right now?
I think one of the biggest similarities is how the oppressor is acting. Because that's one thing where we see the tactics that they use is almost the same thing. From welfareism, for example, they say bigger cages. Well, they did the same thing with the slave ships. They said we're gonna have bigger ships so that the slaves can move. They did all these campaigns to show that not all slave owners or traders are bad. Some of them treat their slaves very well. Obviously, again, as you said, we're not comparing the emotions of the victims nor the activists to the emotions of the animals. It's not the same. It's not something we can compare in the first place. But the way the oppressor functions is almost identical, And I think right now we're at a place where the industry is aware of us and they are doing more effort. I think we're in the phase of they're trying to still push welfareism. Now we meet people and they say, I buy local and free range. So we're at that place, and I'm hoping that sooner, like as soon as possible, we will come to the later stages where there is no welfareism. Everyone understands that the core of veganism is justice and no oppression and nonviolence. And once you get there, it's not about how you're treating the animals. It was never about how they are treated. It's about the fact that they are seen as commodities. Unfortunately, just the same way as humans were seen as commodities. Whoever the slaves were, they were seen as commodities and they were traded as commodities. Even animals are called livestock. It's like stock. It's literally an object, but it's alive. It's livestock. So I think that's where we're at, where the industry is pushing welfareism, and unfortunately, a lot of people have fallen for it. And when it comes to slavery, the difference is that not a lot of people fell for it. They managed to deal with it better than we did. And that's why I kind of have some mixed feelings with some animal rights organizations where they campaign for welfareism, and it really upsets me because we would never accept that in any other situation. And I think it's the same with the animals. We shouldn't accept welfareist laws. We should just campaign for liberation and nothing less than that.
It's a really valid point because it's almost so I until I saw your speech, I never knew that part of the anti-slavery movement in the sense that they were almost comparing they were almost classing slaves as free-range slaves, you know, like we do now with chickens or with grass-fed meat, you know. And it hammered the point home, but it's almost like it's that moral compass is trying to navigate to somewhere better, but it's not quite ready to like be magnetized directly to where it should go. So it's like, but you can see it breaking down. The fact that we're saying free range slaves or free range meat shows to me that people don't feel completely comfortable with the fact that they're making this decision and now they're looking for something for an alternative. So whilst I understand the rationality behind it, it is not, it cannot ever be the end goal, can it? Because it is, you know, it is still ultimately ending in the same direction.
Yeah, definitely, and that's why we can actually use this in our advantage, because if people say, "Oh, I only buy free-range eggs," or "I only buy humanely raised," then we can say, "So that means you care about animals." And they say, "Yeah." We can say, "Why do you care about animals?" And then they can say, "They're sentient beings. They suffer. They want to live. They're conscious of their existence." And those are all reasons to just not buy any animal products. So we can use that in our advantage. But unfortunately, we're talking about a multi-billion industry and their power, not only in politics, but also education and brainwashing and paying off universities and schools to teach something else and spread misinformation, and say that you need to eat this to be healthy, or I don't know, the whole new reasoning now that somehow grass-fed is better for the environment, when actually it's completely the opposite. If you want to eat meat as an environmentalist, you should eat factory farming meat. But that is the most environmentally friendly meat, because when they are grass-fed, they grow slower, and they need more time to be slaughtered. And the more they are alive, the more resources they use, and the more methane they put out in the atmosphere, and the more damage they cause to the environment. So I think there's a lot of misinformation that is spread by the industry, but the good news is that we have social media. So far they can't control that. We can spread education so much. We can spread the facts, you know. And I always say, I don't listen to vegans, I listen to science. I don't need vegans to tell me what is right, except if they tell me science shows that this is right. Then I look at the study. I look if it's peer reviewed, who is doing the study, who is paying for it. And then I can say, okay, this is a fact, you know, you can't argue with this. And then we can spread that as knowledge, you know. People should know that. Because if people care about the environment, then they should know that they should go vegan.
It feels like a responsibility in a time where everyone has a voice and people can spread information about anything and everything, to really, really look at it objectively and say, you know, what is the actual science and the actual data behind this, and how can I bring this forward? Because it's very easy to get caught up in our emotions. I do it all the time. I will be the first person to get emotionally triggered by something and bring it forward into the world and not actually step back and do, you know, properly understand the situation from an objective point of view. But I think it's so powerful when you can do that, because then there is no stumbling. There can be no misalignment with that. So I'm curious then, out of personal research, I understand a bit about it, but I'd love to know more. How does the industry impact everything from our education to what we're told about nutrition and nutritional guidelines and these kind of things? You mentioned obviously there's a lot of subsidies and there's a lot of investments and ulterior motives in there. Could you talk to me a little bit about how that actually works?
So with the money that they have, they use their lobbying power into pressuring or literally paying the governmental organizations to put dairy or meat products or eggs on the nutritional guidelines. And they say, you know, you have to, like, one of the bases is dairy or eggs or meat or chicken for protein. And they do this not because that's what we need, but because they can pay and tell the government to do that. And another thing, for example, when it comes to doctors, in their, I don't know, 6 to 7 or sometimes 10 years of education, they get, like, I think, depending on the country, around 24 hours of nutrition course. These are doctors we're talking about. And we all know that you are what you eat, and they can't even tell you what to eat because they don't know. The only thing they've been told in their short course of nutrition, which most of the time is, like, sponsored by the dairy industry itself, that you should drink milk for calcium and eat meat for protein. I've had a situation where my doctor told me, when I said I want to do a blood test just for a checkup, she said, why? I said, because I'm vegan, I want to do a checkup and make sure I'm healthy. She said, well, I'm going to prescribe protein and calcium supplements for you. And I was like, I don't need that. She said, you need that. I said, I don't need that. You can get that in plants. She said, I'm going to prescribe it now. I said, listen, why don't we do the test? And then if I have deficiency, you can give me the pills and I'll take it. And I was embarrassed on her behalf when I sat down in front of her and she took out the papers and my protein and calcium were too high. I can't imagine this doctor sitting there, and I felt bad for her because it's not her fault, you know? She's studied, she's done her job, but they didn't teach her the right thing. And I was like, how embarrassed is she now that a random client or patient or whatever knows better about nutrition than her? And I haven't even done a nutrition course. So it's really the power of this industry. They just enter everywhere and they just flood it with money. And again, they have lobbying power, which is huge when it comes to politics and governmental, like, nutrition guidelines and things like that.
I wonder where that doctor is now and what if she's still saying the same thing to her patients.
I hope she, like, changed, or when she got home, she decided to do some research, you know?
Who knows, man? Maybe that was a trigger. Like you say, activism comes in many forms, right? And it can literally be the black and white of a health paper, and maybe they go, whoa, okay, maybe there is something to this.
And I hope so.
And this actually leads me on to something that I wanted to talk to you about, because I feel from So there are many reasons people go vegan, right? People can go vegan for animal rights, for environmentalism, for yeah. health reasons. However, there are many times I would encounter someone who is vegan for the animals and has absolutely no interest in looking after their own health. It's just not their priority, which I understand, because their main objective is coming from the heart. It's the emotional objective of animal liberation, which is absolutely like remarkable. However, I feel that as vegans, we also have a responsibility to be healthy, because number one, if you cannot support your own health, then you cannot actually come forward and step into the world and make a positive impact. But number two, I think most importantly, that if people are out there looking for role models, it's very rare they're going to want to listen to the person who is a shell of themselves and their health is crumbling and they're not yeah. actually, you know, they're not the, then you can tell that there is something wrong. So I actually feel from an ethical point of view, the most ethical thing you can do is take charge of your own health first and actually, you know, make that a responsibility too, for yourself, but also for the animals and for the planet. Where do you stand on that equation too?
Yeah, that's like, I'm not quite sure, because of course, when it comes to your own health, your body, your rules, you do whatever you want. But as you said, if you are so unhealthy that your friends can see it, and or just any stranger can see it, and let's say you're doing activism and they can see that you're unhealthy, I mean, let's say it doesn't even have to be necessarily a physical appearance that looks unhealthy or anything, but as long as you are unhealthy, people can still, unfortunately, because of the society we live in, they can still look and say, well, see, that's because veganism isn't healthy, because that's one of the main reasons people eat meat, because everyone eats meat because they think they need to eat meat. You know? Most people don't know that they can live without eating animal products. And that's one of the biggest like obstacles, I would say, that people don't know that it's not an obligation. You know, you can live, you can be so healthy on a vegan diet, and even healthier than a non-vegan diet. And I think when we show that as examples of ourselves being healthy, then you know, people can say, oh yeah, that's true. I mean, you don't look unhealthy, you know, you seem normal to me. I mean, I hate that I'm saying these words, but this is how society works, you know, and we live in this society, and we have to take into consideration that everything we're doing is going to impact our activism, and that's going to impact the animals as a result. So I do think it would be great if people took control of their health, but for me personally, I would want them first and foremost to be healthy for their own sake, because I think the mental balance that being healthy gives is really important, and I wish everyone had that, you know, and I can see it firsthand with my parents. So I mean, my mom has been vegan for almost a year and a half now, and she's just recently started eating healthy as a vegan. She was eating fried and things like that. I mean, it's not like she was eating junk food or anything, but she used to love using oil and everything. She wasn't eating a whole food plant-based diet. So she started doing that, and now she's thriving, you know, and she's going on walks every single morning, and her friends are telling her, like, what have you done? You look 25 again, this and that, you know. And that alone can make people see, wow, you are thriving on a vegan diet. So probably when you say that, maybe I should watch this documentary because what I've been taught is wrong, maybe I should check it out, because you're showing it to me just by living as a healthy vegan. So yeah, it's a bit weird, because then you're kind of asking for someone to do something that belongs to them. It's their own body, it's their own decision. But I do think it would help activism wise, definitely.
It's it also, I think, being an activist, and you will be the person who knows this the best, you're obviously encountering a lot of emotional turbulence, right? Being there at a vigil, or being there, you know, trying to deal with the hate and the objections of people on the street, and actually to empower your own health, and to, like you said, the balance that gives you mentally and physically and emotionally, it almost helps you look, you know, understand and meet these people and meet these situations in a much sort of clearer and calmer headed way. I think having that health and having that strength of mental health it must be one of the reasons it allows you to stay so calm and so loving in the face of adversity, right?
Yeah, it definitely helps. I mean, so I did university and school lectures last year, and at the end it was 49 events in 45 days, and it was as hectic as it sounds, because I very stupidly believe that it's okay to plan for 10 events in 45 days. And as a result, I was getting almost no sleep. I was sleeping very badly. I didn't have time to cook something healthy, you know, because I was always going, like, taking the train, going to the next university or school, and, like, up to 3 lectures in one day, days after day. Last year, at the end, I realized, okay, I'm not doing very well because I'm not eating well, because I'm not living a healthy life. So this year, when I prepared it, I also knew that, okay, I had to do something to make it easier. And ironically, that's one of the reasons why I thought, what if I just carry all these healthy Vivo Life products with me? So when I have enough time, I can quickly make a milkshake at least. I can get my supplements. I can get the Thrive quickly, you know, drink it in the morning and make sure that I'm healthy and I'm getting my nutrients.
Amazing. No, it's so good to hear. I believe that health is a foundation. And certainly I look at it from my own perspective, and I know that you know, the health implications of a plant-based diet allowed me to actually, you know, step forward and make more of an impact in the world than I would have been able to before. And that's why I think from my point of view, I'm so passionate about being able to help people, you know, take control of their health, and make that a priority for themselves, because like you say, and you said this so eloquently, it's not for anyone else, it is your body. But I believe that health is a right that everyone should have, and to be able to help people feel that is, you know, it's the most amazing thing. And the beautiful thing is, you know, no matter what your reason is for promoting a whole foods plant-based diet, is ultimately empowering people, it's empowering the planet, and it's empowering animals too. So that's why I think it is just like it's a no-lose equation.
Yeah, definitely. Because it's like it goes from one to the other. If you're feeling better, you can do your activism better, you know, and that would have a better impact for the animals as well. So it's definitely, I would say at the moment it's 95% of my diet is whole foods. But definitely, you know, if I'm in a city where I've never been in some of those, you have to try the burgers.
I can relate for sure. So I'm intrigued then, because obviously, since we first met, which I think was kind of towards the end of last year, the world is now a very different place. And when we first met, you were traveling all around the world. You were speaking at lectures and events, you know, traveling across multiple countries and continents. And I remember when we spoke earlier this year, before things started to change, you sent me this long list of speeches and things that you had planned up. And you were going from Barcelona to Lebanon to London and all these different things. How has that changed, and how are you now shifting to activism in the current situation that we are in? How does that look for you now?
Yeah. So thankfully, all the speeches, because all of this started in the middle of my like tour or whatever you want to call it, and I had I think 35 more left, but unfortunately I received emails from all of the ones that were coming up, and they said we really have to postpone it. So I was really happy that they all said postpone and not cancel. They all said we want to do it in the future, but obviously now we're closing down, so we can't do it.
Amazing.
So at the moment, what I'm trying to do is concentrate more on creating online content, because more people are at home, more people are spending more time on their phones, on their laptops, watching more YouTube videos, being more on Instagram, more on TikTok, more on Facebook, you know. So I'm really trying to see what's my best way to contribute using social media. So one thing I'm doing is I'm doing more videos on YouTube. I've made one video also about how we can help animals during the lockdown. So it's, I think, 5 or 6 things we can do while on lockdown from our homes to help animals. So one of them, for example, is fostering animals. You know, call your local shelter if you have enough space in your house, if you can do it, foster an animal. You know, there's making online content, you know, starting a podcast, all these different things that people can do. And I think that's one important thing. I also just finished writing an ebook that's going to be out soon. I'm just waiting for two of my friends to go over it, and then I'm going to see if I can translate it to different languages, because people have more time now and they're spending more time on their devices. So I think online content is the best thing we can do right now, because as I said, they can't control, and or at least they're not controlling it in a way that they can stop us for now. So we should take advantage of that, because who knows what the future brings, you know? Maybe in the future they come up with this algorithm where the second the word vegan is in it, your post doesn't get any engagement.
That's when we've got to get creative. That's when we create a new word. I think that's a really beautiful answer, because it's very easy at this time to say I feel powerless because my life has changed so much and there isn't anything I can do. But really, there is everything you can do. And I feel that this now is such a powerful time for humanity. And this doesn't stop with veganism. This comes at a whole approach to so many things in our lives, you know, the way we treat other people, as well as the way we treat animals, the way we treat ourselves. And by having this moment of stillness, it almost allows us to ask ourselves these questions. And now we, as online creators and people who are out there in the online space, have a responsibility, I feel, more than ever, to be able to give our messages out there and make sure people are logging onto their devices, they're consuming things which are going to help them and support them. And so you mentioned some things that you can do at home to help animals in this time. Again, this is out of pure curiosity, because I always want to do more. Could you talk me through a few more things that you can do as well?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm just trying to remember. I had the list written somewhere, but usually when I finish filming a video, I just delete the list. So there's fostering, one of them. There's adopting, obviously. If you can adopt straight away, you can adopt. There is putting some food or water outside your window or your balcony for birds who usually rely on daily human activities to feed themselves. So all the pigeons in the cities who usually go around restaurants or parks and eat the leftovers or whatever's on the floor, now they don't have that. So if you can put some water or food outside, you know, for them, I mean, I'm not saying make a meal for them, but, you know, some seeds, for example, you know, whatever your local animals eat, the healthiest one, of course, for them, you can do that. My favorite actually is really amazing. So it's an application called A Billion Veg. Have you heard of it?
I haven't, no. I'm writing this down. Yeah.
So A Billion Veg is an application. It's an amazing initiative. You open it and you can review any vegan product or vegan meal, all right, as long as you have a photo of them. Mm-hmm. And so you leave a review, you leave where you bought it from, and then that goes in their database. And thanks to that, people, for example, when they're in London, they can open the app and see all the restaurants that have
amazing.
And then they can open per menu, because when you open it, for example, if it's restaurant X, they have the menu because it's building, because people are leaving the reviews. So for one burger, you can have 25 reviews. So it all goes perfectly into the system. And then you can decide what you're going to have. Huh. Now, you can also do that with vegan products. So I've obviously, and even in the video that I made, I show how it's done. And I think I did a review. I think it was of Try. Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
So like, there's already Vivo Life reviews on it as well. And you can put, for example, the money, like, was it not expensive at all, very expensive or mid, like the range. You can write what you thought of it. You can send a message to the company even saying, like, thank you so much for this product. Or if it's a non-vegan business, you can say, please make more vegan products, things like that. And the really nice thing is that for every 10 reviews that you make, okay, so basically, because they reached out to me, and we kind of made this thing where for every 10 reviews, and they do this with different people, they donate $10 to an animal sanctuary.
Wow.
All right, so you're not losing anything. You're not giving any money. So they do this anyway, but when they reached out to me, they said, we're going to do this with you. So whoever signs up with your referral code, which is like Seb Alex, obviously, at the end of the month, we check who did the most reviews, and they win $150. So for each month, that changes. For this month, it's going to be $100 coupon for Ethics Over Habits, which is the online shop that I have that helps me do my activism as well. Mm-hmm. So it literally takes, like, I don't know, 15 minutes, because we have all these photos on our phones, you know, like all the restaurants. We're taking, like, doing it for Instagram, taking all the meals, you know. photos of them, and it stays there for no reason. And all
these, dude, my camera reel is literally restaurants I've been to like over the past.
Exactly. So you just open it, upload the picture, put a review. So every review is $1 donated to a sanctuary, and it comes in like blocks of 10, you know. So once you reach 10 reviews, you can say, all right, now I want to donate. And you have all this list of animal sanctuaries or even organizations. So like I donated, but thanks to my reviews, I chose the Hunt Saboteurs Association, and they donated $10 to them. And they even send you an email afterwards that thanks to you, the money has reached to the charity, you know.
That's incredible. So
from the comfort of your home, being able to donate, not even from your money, $10 to a sanctuary, you know, just because you did 10 reviews. And it, as I said, for example, I've done reviews of the B12, of the Omega, of the J3, of everything, you know, that I was like, whatever I have in the house, I take a photo, boom, review, $1.
Dude, I'm just thinking, I've got thousands of dollars just sitting here on my camera roll in vegan burgers and cheese, and all of these different things I've eaten. And I'm like, wow, okay, well, I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Yeah, it's really, and then the thing is, like, what I did was I opened my photos app and I just like favorited all the meals that I have. Mm-hmm. And then every few days I just like send 5 to my phones and then just use my phone and then like do the reviews. So yeah, and every month we're doing something different. So this month it's gonna be $100 coupon. For next month it will probably cash prize again. So yeah, a billion veg, and then when you sign up you put the referral code Seb Alex so that we can track the donations as well.
So amazing.
I just want to check one thing quickly. So for the month of April, I think, so far people who signed up with the referral code Seb Alex, we have donated altogether $972.
Wow.
So that's almost $1,000 just by people leaving reviews that goes to animal sanctuaries.
That's incredible.
It's really great.
Yeah, and you've actually, so you sparked an idea for me now as well. So as a business, I assume we can use this tool too, right? And we can actually encourage our customers to, when you're reviewing us, review us on here, and then this is actually going to allow them to generate income too. So I'm thinking, and stop me if there is not a way that I could do this, but if after a customer purchases our products, then we can email them and say, please review us, you know, maybe instead of on Trustpilot or Facebook reviews or wherever, review us on here. And it's actually doing something amazing at the same time.
Exactly. That sounds like a great idea. And you can even reach out to them because they're really amazing. And even when they reached out to me, just for full transparency, I've already shared it on Instagram and on YouTube as well. I put it in the description below. That they told me for every time we donate $10 to a sanctuary for someone who signed up with your referral code, independently, we're going to donate $2.50 to you.
Cool.
So, and in the beginning, I thought it's going to be from the $10. I was like, no, I want the 10 to go to the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. But it turns out it's completely independent, you know? So they're actually supporting me as well, which I'm really grateful. And they don't even have to do that, you know? Like, it's really, really amazing. And I think it would be great if you could do that and tell your customers, like, hey, you did this great purchase. We planted a tree as well. You did this, you did that. And then guess what? If you do one extra thing, you also donate, not you, but thanks to you, money will be donated to a sanctuary.
It's incredible. Dude, by the time this podcast is released, I'm going to try and have something at the very least up and running. But guys, yeah, so if you're listening, just head down to the Abillion. It's just, the app is just called Abillion Veg, right?
Abillion Veg. Cool. One word.
Amazing. Well, but yeah, perfect. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that's going to be really powerful. Sweet. Okay, so one thing I wanted to do very quickly, if you're up for it, because you always do this so well, and that's to present you with a few of the biggest arguments I hear against veganism and see if we can debunk them and break them down. We can do this quick fire over the next 5 minutes. Right. Is that something you're happy to do?
Yeah, sure.
Wicked. Okay, cool. So first one I've got, which I hear all the time, is a vegan diet can't be natural because you can't get B12 on a vegan diet. Therefore, we are meant and we evolved to eat animals.
All right. So B12 is a bacteria-formed vitamin. So it comes mostly from the soil, and it exists in water streams and in natural soil that is not completely depleted. And the way that it's supposed to get into our diet is because we eat from the soil, right? We eat the plants and the veggies and the fruits, and a lot of it has have contact with the soil, so that's how we're naturally supposed to get it. But in today's world, first of all, the soil is completely depleted because of monocultures. Then we also have the fact that pesticides and insecticides are over the legumes or the veggies or whatever, and we wash them off. And when we wash, we also kill the B12. And because of that, there is no natural way for us to get it. Now people say, well, animals have B12. Animals have B12 for the same reasons that we would if we were eating from the soil and drinking from the natural streams, but we don't. And guess what? The animals that you eat also don't eat nor drink from natural places. And that's why the animal agriculture industry supplements the animals with B12 so that you can get some B12 when you're eating the animal. So basically what you're saying is you want to supplement an animal with B12 and then kill the animal so that maybe you can get some percentage of that B12 in you when you can just supplement yourself without killing the animal and making sure you're getting 100% of your daily nutritional values. So that's one thing. Another thing that we have to keep in mind is that up to 60 to 65% of the world population has some type of B12 deficiency, and less than 2% of the world population is vegan, which obviously means that B12 is not a vegan-related problem. Otherwise, not 65% of the population wouldn't have a B12 deficiency. So, yeah.
Perfect. So, it's impossible to be vegan because when you grow crops, there are animals killed in farming, no matter what you do. So, therefore, you are not vegan. You're still killing animals for your food.
Yeah, so that's kind of a logical fallacy, because you're saying that just because something is happening, then let's do the worst thing that we could do. For example, just because when I'm walking, I'm sometimes stepping on ants, doesn't mean I should also go around and kicking dogs in the face. You know, if we have to keep in mind that there's something called intention. Our intention when we grow crops is not to kill animals. Our intention when we kill animals is to kill animals. Other than that, completely looking at it statistically, there has been studies done, and the percentage of animals getting killed in crops is around 3%. So that's a very low number. Unfortunately, it's still like out of 103 animals that are dying. But we have to keep in mind that most of the time, the crops where these deaths happen, they're done because of the huge machines and the tractors that they use. And those are the ones that are usually used for huge monoculture fields where the food is used as food for the agriculture industry so that they feed the animals. Mm. So most of the animal deaths in crops comes from the animal agriculture industry itself. So if you are worried about that, you should go vegan. At least then you can minimize your impact. Now, one other thing I want to say is that veganism is not perfect. You're never going to be a person who doesn't kill any animal unintentionally. As long as you're alive, there's some harm being done. Mm-hmm. In the definition of veganism itself, it's very clear. It says, as far as practically possible, the only way to not ever kill an animal is to not exist, to be honest, you know? It's not this perfect solution for all the world's problems. It's not. And guess what? Once the world is vegan, we shouldn't stop there. We should say, all right, what about crop deaths? How can we minimize that? Maybe we can have machines that have sensors. Maybe we can have machines that make certain sounds that make these animals run away. You know, there's so many things that, I mean, when there is intention and good funding, a solution will be found. But the numbers of animals dying in crops is much, much, much less than the 84,000 animals that are killed every single second for human consumption. So yeah, one thing doesn't justify the other, especially when it's unintentional.
Thank you. So it's impossible to have a vegan world. What would we do with all the animals?
Yeah, this is a lot of people say this. So although I would like it to be overnight, we're not going to have a vegan world overnight. The way it works is usually with any industry, the supply and the demand go together. And I know, although we talked about the supply and demand being different when it comes to animal agriculture, once the demand drops massively, it will affect the way it works. The only reason why we have so many animals 60 billion land animals, for example, that are killed every single year is because there's a demand for 60 billion or at least around 50 to 55 billion animals to be killed every single year. Once that demand goes down, the breeding of these animals will go down. Once the breeding goes down, the numbers will go down. So as the demand goes down, so will the numbers. And we will eventually get to a point where we are not breeding animals to kill them or exploit them. And the ones that are left, they can simply live in animal sanctuaries the way they already do all around the world. And we do have more than enough money to take care of them. All the, like, I think for the United States in 2018, the subsidies for the animal agriculture industry, I think, was around $800 billion.
Oh.
That's almost $1 trillion. So...
You know, when numbers are so big, they don't even make sense in your head. You can't even picture what that looks like.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know how to say it, but when it comes to how much we are killing, it's 2.7 trillion animals per second. All right. When I first found out what that number is, because I was going to use it in my lectures, 2.7 trillion animals are dying every single year, or are being killed. How is that going to have an impact on anyone? No one knows what the human brain cannot comprehend. Yeah. What 1 trillion is. We don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's why I had to calculate it down to per second, and the number is 84,000 animals per second. No, and that's not even enough. I don't even, like, how long have we been on this call for, you know? Multiply those seconds by 84,000. That's how many animals are being killed every single second. So there's never a way. I mean, I'm trying to, I quickly checked if I can see the number of the subsidies, but you know, when you look at it in official things, they say like 38 billion. It doesn't get close to a trillion, but I have seen a documentary that shows that it's almost a trillion. Let's forget that. Let's take that back. Let's just say the number.
That's semantics, right? If it was a billion or 100 million, like, it's, yeah.
Even if it's 38 billion, which is the number they're giving, let's bring it down to 1 billion. That's still so much money. We can feed so many people. We can house so many people. We can help so many people. Our healthcare system would benefit so much from that money, you know? So, back to the question. All the animals that are alive right now are alive because they are being bred, because there is a demand. They're being bred to get exploited and killed. And once the demand goes down, you personally will have a power. And maybe one person going vegan will not make that much of a difference. But, you know, 1 billion people individually going vegan is going to make a massive difference.
Absolutely. Last one for you. Plants feel pain too.
I was wondering if it's going to be that, or we need protein, or...
All right.
So, plants feel pain. So there's a few ways to tackle this question. The first one is the scientific way. Plants don't feel pain, and that's a fact, because in order to feel pain, you need a nervous system and a brain. Plants don't have either of them. That's why they are plants, and they are not animals. So another thing is that even if plants felt pain, non-vegan diet consumes up to 13 to 14 times more plants than a vegan diet, because by eating animal products, you are also causing plant suffering to all the plants that are cultivated to be fed, to be used as food for the animals that you are eating. So that's why the United Nations, when they did a study a few years ago, actually, they said in order to prevent like the worst catastrophes of climate change, but also to deal with world hunger, we have to switch to a plant-based food system. Why? Because we are already planting enough food to feed 11 billion human beings, but instead we're giving that food to the animals that we are eating, you know? So in a parallel universe where plants feel pain, if you care about plants' rights, then you should go vegan, because as a non-vegan, you're consuming more plants and causing more plant suffering. But that is not why you're saying that. You don't care about plants. You are just using a logical fallacy to bring up a random other cause and taking the attention away from the animals.
That's the one I struggle with the most, because anyone who says that is just trying to catch you out. I've never met a person that doesn't give a shit about animals, but they care so deeply about plants. I mean, I care about plants massively too. I'll be the first one to go and hug a tree, but I wouldn't go and like just kick a dog or something. You know, it just doesn't make sense. I think we've broken that one down. Beautiful. Seb, you're such a light, brother. I really appreciate all the work that you do. I know it's not easy by any stretch of the imagination, but it's thanks to people like you that we are turning the tide. So I just really want to take the opportunity to say thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And thanks for what you're doing as well, because, you know, we do need... when I first made the stories about Vivo on my Instagram, I wanted to make sure that people are aware I'm doing this, because I genuinely... I'm amazed by what you're doing, you know, not because I love the products, but that's not why I wanted to talk about the company so much. You know, I think Vivo really shows what the future could be like. Companies that use fully compostable packaging, companies that plant trees for every single purchase, companies that donate money to certain associations or charities, you know, companies that use, obviously, when it comes to veganism, veganic farming to make sure that from, like, literally, that's vegan level 1000, you know, you got it from the seed to your plate, it's all vegan, no animal manure used. So I really, really appreciate what you're doing as a company.
Thank you, brother. And Seb, where can people go ahead?
Also the transparency. So, for example, I really, really am amazed how Vivo sent an email saying that, unfortunately, because of the situation, we don't have access or the opportunity to use our compostable packaging. You know, that kind of transparency is just, who does that nowadays? You know, it's really amazing. So thank you for being so honest and also so ethical.
Thank you, man. And that's one thing I have learned over the years, is that, you know, it's more about the intention rather than the perfection. And when we said that we are going to launch 100% home compostable packaging, that is the intention, and there was always going to be obstacles along the way. But what I know is that we have such an incredible group of customers who share the intention, that there are going to be roadblocks along the way. But as long as you're transparent and you can communicate that with them, they will completely understand. The worst thing I could try and do is bury my head in the sand and say, this isn't happening. And then people start getting plastic pouches turn up at their door and go, well, what the hell's going on? I want to pay for a compostable pouch. I just think... We just need to be able to be honest with each other and understand the intentions are the right ones. Thank you. Where can people see more about your work, and is there any links that you want to share, and I can put them all in the show notes?
I think just my website, sebalex.org. You can have access to my YouTube and Instagram and Facebook from there. It's all linked.
Beautiful. Yeah. Nice, Seb. Really appreciate you, brother. And everyone listening, thank you for being here.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.